transitions and inflation.
Hello. Can everybody hear me? So today I'm going to talk about some of the work that I've been doing with my advisor Pranab Singh on capital transitions and inflationary scenario in the given space time. So in this work we are going to use the effective description of HQC. Effective description of HQC has been discussed in quite detail in the isotropic HQC and very rigorous numerical simulations have shown that the trajectory of effective description agrees very well with the trajectories of HQC. So we are going to use effective description and we're going to assume that effective description is still valid in a given space time. So moving on to the next slide, Bianchi model represents the anisotropic space time, which introduces more degrees of freedom as compared to the isotropic space time in terms of the expansion in different directions, different expansion rate in different directions. In Bianchi models, due to non-vanishing wild scalar, the physics is much richer and it gives to rise to several interesting phenomena. In terms of in the classical theory, the anisotropic shear scalar in the Bianchi model, it varies the anisotropic shear scalar sigma square, it varies as a to the minus 6, where a is the mean scale factor of the space time. And as singularity is approached, the mean scale factor vanishes, and in turn, the shear scalar diverges, signaling the approach towards singularity. Another very important place where the Bianchi models are seen to be very interesting is the so-called Belinsky elastic Lipschitz conjecture, which says that during a generic approach towards a space-like singularity, each point in the space-time can be modeled by a Bianchi one type metric, and in the time evolution, that point runs from one type of Bianchi one solution to another type. Is there a question? And this gives rise to a chaotic behavior, also known as McMaster behavior. Moving on to the next slide. Here we have the line element of the acumulative time in the classical theory. And as you can see, that the spatial part of metric is now characterized by three factors, A1, A2, A3, which include information about the expansion in different directions. So due to different expansion rates in different directions, in the classical theory, the approach towards singularity can be of different types. For example, if all of the scale factors A1, A2, A3, they approach to vanish at the same time, then the type of singularity is categorized as point or isotropic singularity. Similarly, barren type of structure near singularity is formed when one of the scale factors approaches to a constant finite value while the other two tend to vanish. In the same way, pancake-like structure can be obtained when one of the directions it approaches to zero, squeezing, while the other two, they approach to constant value, forming a pancake-like structure as you approach to singularity. And in a similar way, cigar can be approached when one of the directions diverges, while the other two tend to vanish. In all these instances of approach to singularity, the mean scale factor, which is given by the geometric mean of the directional scale factors A1, A2, A3, it vanishes and all the conventional intermediates, they diverge. In loop quantum cosmology, the quantization of Bianchi one space-time has been performed by Astrakhan and Vincent Ewing in 2009, and this quantization it improves and revamps some of the issues which were around in the earlier approaches to quantization developed by several people. So in this quantization proposed by Astrakhan and Vincent Ewing, the classical singularity is resolved. Moreover, based on this quantization, the effective description was studied in quite detail. And based on the study done by Singh in 2011, it was established that all the conventional invariants, they are bounded, and this tells you that in the effective description of Yankee 1 space-time, the, all the physical things that you are resolved. Several other interesting phenomena and behavior of Bianchi Well space-time and effective description was studied by several people, and saying that the Big Bang type of classical singularity is replaced by a non-singular bound in the effective description. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 4. I give as a goal of this talk, I pose some important questions that we are aiming to answer in this talk. So, this talk will be divided into two main parts. The first will be international transition, and then we will move to the discussion of inflation. So in the context of capital transition, the first question that we are going to ask is, what happens to the different geometrical structure as you move from one side of the bomb to the other side of the bomb? For example, if there is a classical observer, a distant classical observer on one side of the bound, and he measures the Kastner exponent, and he sees that universe or space time is going to form a cigar-like structure as you approach towards singularity, then what a distant classical observer on the other side of the bound will see? Will he see a cigar or a point? And is there a transition from one type of approach to the other type of approach? And if there is any such transition, then can we categorize them? And are they favored depending on the matter content and the anisotropic shape of the space-time? So these are the type of questions that we're going to aim to answer in capital transition. And we'll move to discussion of inflation in the Yankee 1 space-time, whether we'll investigate whether the presence of anisotropy prevents inflation or not. So this was the question which was around people really in the beginning when state of inflation arrived, and we'll pose that question and try to answer in context of LQC. Well, we'll see how LQC, the effective description of LQC modifies the dynamics and the amount of inflation in the Yankee 1 space-time. And to go into a little bit more quantitative details of this problem, we'll see how does presence of anisotropy in the Yankee 1 space-time affect the amount of e-foldings or amount of inflation as compared to the isotropic space-time. So moving on to the next slide, slide number 5.
Can you go back to slide number 4 for a second, please?
Yes.
So in this Kastner transition, there are two types of things one could look at, right? One is really kind of an S matrix, namely something that happens in the distant past,
right,
in the contracting branch, if something happens in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, one can have various kinds of, you know, cigar-like and barrel-like and so on. So that's not what you're looking at.
Yes.
Yeah. So you only, just want to make sure that you're only looking at what is happening near the bounce. As you approach the bounce, so to say, from the past, and as you approach it from the future,
right,
what happens. So that is what you mean by transition. Is that
yes,
correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying. So slide number 5. Yes. So in context of Kastner transitions, our analysis shows that there are these transitions, as I pointed out, that if a distant classical observer far from bounds, he sees a cigar-like structure, then there is a possibility that an observer on the other side of the bounds, he'll see a point-like structure or barrel-like structure. And it turns out that these transitions are not random, they follow a particular order, and there can be associated a selection factor rule to them, and depending on the anisotropic content of the space-time, we can some of the transitions are favored over the others, and we'll see how. In context of inflation, in our analysis, we see that the irrespective of the initial anisotropic shear, and by initial, in the effective description of LQC, I mean that the initial anisotropic shear at the bounce. So in the effective analysis in the context of inflation, we give initial conditions at the bounce. We see that there is a non-trivial dependence of the amount of inflation as a function of the initial shear scale. Again, initial scale is given at the bounds. And to go in a more quantitative analysis of this problem shows that there are some modifications as in the initial value of inverton field as compared to the isotropic phase time in IQC in order to generate a given amount of inflation. So moving on to next slide, slide number 6, here I give the plan of the rest of the talk. First we will review the Kastner solution in the classical IQC phase time, and then we'll visit briefly the effective dynamics of the IQC phase time in IQC. Then I'll talk about the Kastner transitions by taking an example of perfect Fourier with constant equation of state given as the pressure is equal to density. And I'll stick to this perfect Fourier for discussion in this talk because it turns out that the dynamics of Kastner transition is much richer in this case than others. And then later we'll talk about inflation in Bianchi one space time by considering inflationary quadratic potential given as V phi equals to half m squared phi squared, where phi is the scalar field and m is the mass of the scalar field. So moving on to next slide, slide number 7. So in vacuum, it turns out that the unsafe field equation can be exactly solved, and it turns out that the directional scale factor in Bianchi one space time can be written as power laws with constant exponents. For example, AI can be written as a proportional to T to the KI, where KI are the Kastner exponents. And in vacuum, these Kastner exponents that satisfy the constraint given in equation number 1. Summation of K1, K2, K3 is 1, and also the summation of the L squared is 1. Interestingly, if one considers state matter, this is again with the equation of state W equals to ratio of pressure over density equal to 1, then it turns out that even in this case, the directional scale factors can be written as power laws with constant exponents. But now the exponents K1, K2, K3, they satisfy a different constraint than vacuum. The summation of the K1, K2, K3 remains 1 as in vacuum, but the second constraint, that is the summation of the squares of these triplets, is modified. K1 square plus K2 square plus K3 square is equal to 1 minus K square, where K is a constant that depends on the thick matter. So if one considers a massless scalar field, for example, then K can be related to the momentum of the massless scalar field. Now, based on the values of Kastner exponents, it turns out that the geometrical structure of the approach to singularity can be categorized. For example, point-like approaches to singularity can be defined when all of the Kastner exponents are positive. The K1, K2, K3 are positive. For barrel, one of the exponents should be 0 while the other two being positive. And for pancake, two of them should be 0 while the other should be positive. And for cigar, one should be negative and while the other should be, two should be positive. So if you consider the condition for pancake structure, K1 equal to K2 equal to 0, and substitute equation number 2, it turns out that K3 will be equal to 1 from the first constraint, and which in turn gives K equal to 0 in the second constraint. So this tells you that if you have stiff matter, then pancake type structure is not allowed. For other perfect fluids with constant equation of state W being between 0 and 1, the behavior of space-time is like vacuum close to singularity, while in the future, as we talk limit, they have different behavior depending on what kind of perfect fluid you can see there. For example, for dust, they behave like T to the 2/3, while for radiation, it's T to the 1/2. So moving on to next slide, slide number 8, here I briefly present the effective dynamics of Yankee-1 spacetime. So equation 1 gives the effective Hamiltonian in Yankee-1 spacetime, and this was guessed by initially by Chu and van der Sloot in their paper, but later it was properly derived and was given in the quantization by Astriker and Wilson even. So in equation number 1, mu1, mu2, mu3, mu1 bar, mu2 bar, mu3 bar, they are related to the directional drive PI, P1, P2, PC, as given on this slide, and C1, C2, CC are the directional connections. So triads are related to the directional speed factors as P1 equal to A2 times A3, and similarly P2 and P3 can be related to A1, A2, A3 by a cyclic permutation of this relation. And in the classical theory, the connection is related to the time derivative of the directional speed factor as C1 equals to gamma times A1 dot, where gamma is the ability parameter, and A1 dot is the time derivative of scale factor in direction 1. Similarly, C2 and C3 can be defined as gamma A2 dot and gamma AC dot. If one considers the Hamiltonian equations of motion based on the effective Hamiltonian given in equation number 1, one can derive the dynamical equation for connections and triads. And for example, in C, I give an example of the equations of motion for triads P1. Moreover, if you consider the vanishing of Hamiltonian constraints, which is required for physical dynamics, then one comes up with a relation between the energy density of the matter and the gravitational part of the Hamiltonian as given in the first equality of equation number 4. As you can see, that the terms in the square bracket, they contain the trigonometrical sine function, which are bounded above by 1. And if you consider the maximum of these values, then one can compute the maximum allowed value of the energy density when the Hamiltonian constraint is satisfied to be 0.41 rho Planck, where rho Planck is the Planck density. And this maximum value of energy density is same as the upper bound of energy density in the isotopic case. Similarly, the expansion scalar and shear scalar can be computed, and by considering the maximum value of the trigonometrical function, one can compute the bound on expansion scalar and shear scalar as in equation number 5 and 6. These quantities, energy density, expansion scalar, and shear scalar, the bounds on these quantities are important because all the curvature invariants in the Yankee-1 spacetime can be written in terms of these quantities, energy density, expansion scalar, and shear scalar. So boundedness on these quantities implies the boundedness of the curvature invariant, which further implies resolution of physical singularity. So moving on to next slide, slide number 9. So here I present one example of simulation for fixed matter, where P pressure is equal to energy density. So if you look at the first plot, the red solid curve, it represents the evolution of effective type, mean scale factor in the effective description of LTC, while the blue dash curve, it shows the classical trajectory. So as you can see, in the backward evolution, the classical trajectory, mean scale factor vanishes, while in the effective description, the mean scale factor undergoes a smooth transition to other branch across the bound. And one thing to note is that far from bound, the classical and the effective trajectory, they agree with each other very well. Again, the mean scale factor is defined as the geometric mean of the directional scale factor as cube root of A1 times A2 times A3. If one looks at the evolution of individual scale factor as shown in the second plot in the bottom of the slide, again, the solid curves, they represent the evolution under the effective description of L2C, and the dotted and dashed curve, they show the effective classical trajectory. So far from bounds, classical trajectory and the effective trajectory, they agree very well with each other. And as you approach towards the Blanchian regime, the classical trajectory, it falls into singularity, while there's a smooth transition in the effective trajectory. So if there is a distant classical observer on the right side of the bound, for example, and he measures the capital exponents, and he finds out that these capital exponents, they correspond to a cigar-type structure. Yeah. So in this particular example, far from bounds on the other side of the bound, if there is a distant classical observer, he measures the value of capital exponents, and he finds out that it corresponds to a cigar-type structure. So in this particular example, it turns out that there is a transition from a cigar-type structure to a cigar-type structure as you go from one side of the bound to the other side of the bound in this evolution. So cigar to cigar is not the only possible transition, as we'll see on the next slide, but there are several other possible transitions, and we'll categorize them based on the anisotropic content of the space time. So moving on to the next slide, slide number 10.
Can we go back to slide, please?
Yes.
So I'm trying to understand why the left-hand side is cigar. So cigar, need one of the scale factors to blow up, right? So let me take left-hand side just for concreteness. So then this, the bottom scale factor, which is red one, it is blowing up. And the other two scale factors should go to zero. These are the top two ones, is that right? And these are going to zero. The same thing is happening in the on the right-hand side, that the two scale factors are decreasing, they're going to zero. And one of them, maybe the black one, is actually blowing up. But the individual scale factors, namely, the one which is actually, the one which is blowing up coming from the contracting side, is not blowing up coming from the, Bildeck shape, is that right?
Yeah, so if, very good point. So if you consider the classical trajectory on the left side of the bound, so the trajectory corresponding to the red curve, which is, if you come from the contracting side, the classical trajectory will blow up, right? While the classical trajectory corresponding to blue and orange curve, if you come from the contracting side towards the bound, they will go down. So two of the directions, they are squeezing, while one of the direction is blowing up, so forming a cigar-type structure in this case.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Next slide, yeah. Slide number 10. So here I present several examples of transition from one type of structure to the other type of structure. For example, in the first plot, there is a transition from barrel to cigar. So here I present the values of the castle exponents on two sides of the bound, far from bound. So in the first plot, you can see that on the left side of the bound, on the contracting side, one of the castle exponents is zero, while the other two are positive. And on the other side of the bound, which is the right side, two of them are positive and one of them is negative, corresponding to barrel to a cigar transition. On the second plot, on the right side on the top, this example shows a transition from cigar to barrel kind of transition. On the left side of the bound, where one of the casual exponents is negative while the other two is positive, and on the right side, two of them is positive and one is zero, corresponding to a barrel type structure. In a similar way, point to cigar transition is shown in the left bottom part plot, where on the left side of the bound, all of the cathode exponents are positive, while on the right side, one of them is negative and two are positive, giving rise to a point to cigar transition. And in the fourth plot, there is a cigar to cigar transition. As you can see, on the both sides, one of them is negative, while two of them are positive. this specifies to a cigar transition. So these are just four examples, just to give you an idea of how what do we actually mean by transition and how do we compute things. So on the next slide, we'll see that depending on the present anisotropy in the spacetime, several transitions are allowed and computed. So moving on to the next slide.
No, sorry. Let's go back at 10 again.
Yes.
So, I mean, the way it looks like is that this k is actually a discontinuity. If that were the case, then the space-time metric would have discontinuities. But that's not what you mean, probably, right? Yeah, this is probably some artifact of numerics or approximations or something like that. Is that right? Because, you know, k's on the right left-hand side are very different from k's on the right-hand side. And the transition is occurring at t not equal to zero something, you know, t equal to some negative value.
Right.
So if I just look at the space-time metric,
mm-hmm.
it would look like the space-time metric is discontinuous, which is very unlikely to be the case because you're just solving differential equations. So is this an artifact of the numerics? I mean, in the sense that we're not seeing the smooth going from one side to the other side. Are you saying that in fact there is a discrete transition and the metric is not smooth?
No, metric is smooth. Actually, if you zoom in near the transition area, there is a smooth transition from one side to the other. Actually, the zoomed in part is in the paper, so if you want to look at it, I recommend you to look at
it. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Going to the next slide number 11. So here I present a table of several possible transitions. So P corresponds to point, B corresponds to barrel, and C corresponds to cigar. So, and all these arrows are double-headed arrows, meaning that transition is possible both ways. And delta is defined as the relation given in the red right upper the table in here.
But where is that evaluated? I mean, that the right-hand side that you're, sigma and theta are time-dependent quantities, right?
Right.
So where are we evaluating this delta? You're giving specific values of delta.
Right. So for stiff matter, sigma squared and theta squared, they behave in the same way. So for stiff matter, delta is a constant of motion in the classical theory.
Okay. And you're only plotting for stiff matter at the moment?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So if delta, value of delta is zero, it means it's space-time isotropic. While if the value of delta is large, close to one, space-time is highly isotropic. So if you look at the table in the extreme left column, if the value of delta is less than half, it turns out there is only point-to-point transition possible. It means that the space-time does not have enough anisotropy to induce other type of approaches to structure. So there is only a point-to-point transition that's possible on both sides. As you increase the value of delta, there are other transitions. For example, parallel to point and cigar to point transitions, they kick in. And let me emphasize again that these red double-headed arrows, they show transition both ways. On the extreme right column, corresponding to the highly anisotropic regime, can see that there is a present cigar to cigar transition which is not present in any other regime of delta. So this tells you that cigar to cigar transition is highly anisotropic transition. So from this table we learn that depending on value of delta, there are some transitions which are allowed and some are forbidden. And based on another anisotropic parameter whose form is a little bit more complicated, one can exactly predict what kind of transition is going to happen out of the allowed transition. Okay. So, depending on the value of delta, some transitions are favored over the other. Okay. In the low anisotropic regime, as in the extreme left table, there is point-to-point transition, and as we increase the value of an isotropy, there are some other transitions which kick in, and cigar-to-cigar transition, it only happens in the large anisotropic regime, it signals that cigar to cigar transition is highly energetic. Okay. So are there any more questions before we move to the next part of the talk?
This delta, I mean, I'm still confused about why this thing happens so sharply, right? I mean, everything is continuous, right? So,
right.
So therefore, why are there some sharp values like delta equal to 1/2 and delta less than 1/2 and so on and so forth? Can one understand?
Yeah. So, for example, if you see that delta equal to 1/2, there is a barrel to point transition, right? So, barrel type of structures they form when one of the capital exponents is zero. Okay. So that's why there are these sharp values to show that the transition between barrel to point, they start happening as soon as you hit the value of delta equal to 1/2. Otherwise, they are smooth ranges at which these transitions take place. For example, barrel to point transition is also present in the third column, where there is a range of value of delta. And the second and the fourth column, it is just to represent that these transitions, for example, barrel to point, they start kicking in as soon as you hit the value of delta, and barrel to barrel. And specifically, in the fourth column, you can see that barrel to barrel transition, that happens only if you have delta equal to 1 over square root k. So this has to do with the value of the exact capital exponent and the allowed structures from that.
So you're saying that in a stigmata case, if delta is less than 1/2,
mm-hmm.
then the singularity is necessarily point-like. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean, both in classical theory and
yes.
in the effective theory, as you are approaching the powers from both sides.
Right.
But you never get.
No.
So it's not only transition occurring or not occurring, but you're saying that everything will be just point-like. You'll never get a barrel-type singular,
no.
barrel-type behavior, or cigar-type behavior if delta is less than 1/2.
That's right.
Okay. And similarly for the other thing. Okay.
Yeah. Moving on to the next slide. Slide number 12. So here we begin the discussion of inflation in Dirac-Lewis space-time. So inflation is defined as a phase of accelerated expansion in the early universe, and it has been studied widely in literature by several people in various theories of gravity. In the context of Dirac-Lewis space-time, as the theory of inflation arrived, people started worrying whether the presence of an isotropy prevents inflation or not. So as the models of inflation were improved, it was pointed out by Stigmund and Turner and people that the presence of an isotropy actually does not prevent inflation from happening. Okay. Later, it was argued by Rothman, Madsen, and Rothman, Alice that for a proper treatment of inflation in Dirac-Lewis space-time, one should consider quantum theory of gravity. Because in the pre-inflation era, shear scalar is diverging and the classical theory is not very reliable anymore, so one should consider a theory which is, which is motivated from a quantum theory. Later, with the advent of brain cosmology, Martin, Sahni, and Sani, they studied the inflation in Dirac-Lewis space-time, and they found that an isotropy actually helps attain more amount of inflation in Dirac-Lewis space-time. In MQC, inflation has been studied in a fair amount of detail. For example, by Astrid, Pawlowski, and Singh, the inflation has been studied by considering the evolution of semi-classical states in five square potential or in the isotropic space-time, and this paper is soon to appear. Moreover, in the effective description of the isotropic inflation with the qualitative behavior and the quantitative behavior has been studied in quite a detail by Asif and Rasool in 2009, and there they established the fact that in isotropic accuracy, the probability of inflation is very high, as high as 99.99%. Moreover, other aspects of this problem was also studied by Qureshi and Karami in 2010. So here we are going to consider Yankee-Wall space-time with inflation potential in the effective restriction and see what is the status here. So moving on to the next slide, slide number 13. So here I present just a quick review of inflation in the Yankee-Wall space-time in the classical theory. So equation number 1 shows the generalized Friedman equation, where H is the mean Hubble rate, which is defined as the ratio of time derivative of mean scale factor A and A. So H is A dot over A. And F square is related to the energy density as 8 pi g over 3 times energy density plus 1 over 6 sigma square, where sigma square is a shear scalar. Similarly, the right order equation for the Yankee-Wall space-time can be written as shown in equation number 2, where A double dot over A is related to energy density, pressure, and shear scalar. In this model, we are going to consider a scalar field phi under the influence of a self-interacting potential V phi. And for such a matter field, the conservation equation can be written as given in equation number 3. So if you look at equation number 3, on the left hand side, the second term, the Ch phi dot, it appears as the friction term in this equation. And because of the presence of H, the mean Hubble rate, this term is also known as Hubble friction. So the role of Hubble friction is to slow down the scalar field. For example, if you start with a high value of phi dot, the presence of H, it makes the scalar field lose its kinetic energy and slow down if the Hubble rate is strong. Equation number 4 relates the energy density and the variables of scalar field phi dot and V phi to energy density and pressure. If you consider equation number 4 and substitute it in equation number 2, then you obtain equation number 5, which is nothing but right order equation written in terms of the variables of scalar field. So to obtain accelerated expansion, of the mean scale factor, one should have A double dot greater than 0. Yes. So from equation number 5, we learn that for A double dot greater than 0, one should have V phi greater than phi dot squared. So this is related to the one way of obtaining inflation phase, which is called the slow roll condition, that V phi should be much, much greater than phi dot squared. So this is known as the slow roll in the isotropic case. So what is the effect of sigma square in this scenario? So if you look at equation number 1 once again, then value of sigma square actually increases the value of Hubble rate, because S square is proportional to sigma square, which in turn increases the friction term in equation number 3. So increment in shear scalar, sigma square, increases the Hubble friction, which will make the scalar field to slow down at a faster rate. And to slow down at a faster rate means that the slow roll conditions will be achieved quicker than before. Okay. So if you look at the diagram of the bottom left here, the blue curve shows the potential V phi, the quadratic potential, and the red dot shows the initial position of the scalar field in the potential, and the arrow shows that the scalar field is, for example, moving down. So if you increase the isotropy, Hubble friction increases, faster decay of kinetic energy, and the slow roll is arrived earlier. It means, in this case, if the scalar field is rolling down, then in presence of an isotropy, the slow roll will start at a higher value of phi than before. Okay? Which means that at the higher value of phi than before. Okay? So this was just an example to show how slow roll affects how an isotropy affects the rolling of scalar fields in potential. Okay. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 14. Here I present a quantitative analysis of the number of E-foldings depending on shear scalar in the initial data in the classical theory. So in the classical theory, I give the initial data before the inflation starts. I mean, since in the classical theory there is no such reference point where you can give initial data, so while giving the initial data, we make sure that inflation does not happen right away, and inflation will start happening in much later in the evolution. So the amount of E-folding is quantified in terms of the number of E-foldings. The amount of inflation is quantified as number of E-foldings, and which is defined as the logarithm of the ratio of the mean scale factor at the end of inflation to the value of mean scale factor at the onset of inflation. And it turns out that the number of E-folding n is proportional to the value of inflaton field phi at the onset of inflation. Okay. So for this simulation, we have fixed the value of phi in the initial data to be 3.14. The value of this value, 3.14, is same as one considers in the slow roll, in the isotropic slow roll, you get 60 number of E-foldings. So this is just to show a scenario, like what happens if you take the same value in the initial data and vary an isotropy. But clearly, one can take different value of initial phi and do the analysis. So the quantitative behavior will change, but the qualitative feature still remains the same. So on the left plot, I show the variation of number of E-foldings as you increase the anisotropy. And here I plot with respect to epsilon A square, which is nothing but the ratio of sigma square and energy density. One could have plotted this plot as with respect to sigma square also, and one would still get the same behavior. So on the left plot, I consider a scalar field which is initially rolling down in the initial data. That is, phi dot zero is less than zero. And you can see there are several different plots corresponding to different initial values of phi dot. The red one corresponds to 2 to the 10 to the minus 5. The blue dotted curve shows 0.002. And the orange dotted curve shows minus 0.02, and the black one shows the phi dot initial to be minus 0.1. So these initial data are far from the values of phi dot at the start of slow roll. So as you increase an isotropy from a low value to high value, you see that the number of E foldings increase. And this is because of the same reason as we discussed in the last slide, that incrementing anisotropy makes the scalar field slow down at a faster rate, which entails to the situation that now slow roll will start at a higher value of phi if the scalar field is rolling down in the initial data. In the higher anisotropic regime, in the left plot again, for example, at when LN LN S7K square is over 16, see that all the initial conditions, they tend to give same number of E-foldings. And this is because of the fact that presence of fine isotropy slows down the inflaton no matter what initial phi dot you choose, no matter how high phi dot you choose. So in the high isotropic regime, inflation slows starts happening at a very close value to its initial value, which is 3.14 in this case, and they tend to give approximately the same number of info links in the high NSF regimes. On the right plot, I show a similar behavior of similar thing for 5.0 greater than 0. I mean, in this plot, I consider that the scalar field in the initial data is going up. So as we increase the anisotropy, since the scalar field is going up, inflation, global conditions are achieved earlier, and now as we increase anisotropy, inflation or slow roll will start happening at a smaller value of 5. And that is why as we increase anisotropy, the number of refoldings decrease. And they tend to attain same value in the high anisotropy regime. So the reason that in the high anisotropy regime, Hubble friction is so strong that the slow roll conditions are met at a very close value to its initial value, which is 3.14 in this case. And again, one can do analysis with different initial values of 5, and one will get same qualitative behavior, but different quantitative behavior. So what we learned from this earlier, yes.
How does one understand? It takes the left-hand plot,
yes,
for simplicity, which is what standard inflation people would assume.
Right.
That about said, the inflaton is rolling down the potential.
Yes.
So how do I understand that for large anisotropies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get exactly the same, I mean, the curve flattens.
Okay. So,
some are greater, because from your previous analysis, from previous qualitative arguments, you're saying that higher the anisotropy,
mm-hmm,
higher the Hubble parameter,
mm-hmm,
and therefore the onset is earlier.
Right.
And therefore, you get more refoldings.
Right.
But now there is saturation. So how do I understand the saturation part?
Okay. So the way to understand saturation is as follows. For example, if you start, let's say, your initial value of 5 is somewhere, let's say 3.14 in this case. Okay. As you increase the anisotropy, the Hubble friction becomes stronger and stronger. Okay. And since the initial, in the initial data, we are considering that the slow the inflaton is rolling down, then in the high anisotropic regime, inflaton will slow down very fast. And the maximum the maximum value at which the slow roll can start in this case would be the initial value of 5, which is 3.14 in this case. Okay. And that's why for different initial 5.0, in the high anisotropic regime, they tend to give same number of refoldings. In
the
So moving on to the next slide, slide number 15, we consider the amount of refolding in the effective description of NPC in Bianchi-1. So unlike in the classical theory, where the Hubble rate is directly proportional to Hubble rate square, is directly proportional to sigma square, and increment in sigma square meant that the value of Hubble rate will increase. Okay. In this case, in Bianchi-1 space time, we solved the numerical equations and we saw that the Hubble rate does not monotonically vary with sigma square at the bound. So in the effective description, we give the initial condition at the bound. Okay. So it turns out that in the effective description in your own space time, as you increase the value of sigma square at the bounds, the Hubble rate, it increases, reaches the maxima, and then goes down. And this behavior is for the both if the scalar field is initially rolling down or up. So due to this,
that is just because Hubble parameter is zero at the bounds, so it has to go down. The qualitative difference is because whereas if you're going backward in time, say for example to be specific,
in classical general relativity, Hubble parameter monotonically increases.
Right.
Whereas in Lucon cosmology, because of the bounds, the Hubble parameter must go to zero
right.
at the bounds. So therefore, there must be a turnaround. And that is what you're saying. Isn't that right?
Yes. No, but in this case, we are plotting something different. In this plot shows the value of Hubble parameters at the start of slow roll as a function of sigma square at the bounds. So this is something different.
So can we understand why, I mean, qualitatively, why it turns around?
Oh, because if one tries to write a generalized Friedman equation in the effective description in the Bianchi-Lund space-time, then there are higher order corrections due to sigma square, which come with the opposite sign, with negative sign. For example, the corrections with sigma square, which comes with a negative sign, and because of that there is a non-monotonicity in the behavior of Hubble rate with respect to the value of sigma square. So one can write yes, go ahead, please.
No, okay. You go ahead. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay, so due to the non-monotonicity in the value of Hubble rate at sigma square, there is non-monotonic behavior seen in the number of e-foldings as you increase sigma square. For example, if sigma square, if phi dot is less than 0 at the bound, so that means that if you consider the implicancy to roll down, the number of e-foldings increase as increase the value of sigma square, reach a maximum, and then go down. And similarly, the opposite behavior is seen when phi dot is greater than 0 in the initial data, that is, if the interton is filling up. So, a number of e-foldings they go down, reach a minima, and they go up.
Okay.
So, are there any more questions on this slide?
Yeah, just one. So, in this various plot, as you change sigma squared, you're keeping the density constant, is it?
Yes.
Okay, that's the point. Thank you.
Yeah, moving on to the next slide. Slide number 16. Here I provide a quantitative, detail for some of the initial conditions, and there are other conditions also done, and details of those conditions will be in the upcoming paper. So here again, I fix the initial value of phi dot, initial value of phi at 3.14 Planck mass, and again this initial data is given at the bounds. So for we see that different values of phi dot, we get different number of e-foldings. For example, if phi dot is minus 0.2, it's 42, minus 0.02 is 60, and minus 0.002 is 62. In the isotropy calculus, at the bound, the energy density saturates its maximum, upper maximum, which is the rho critical. And in turn, that constrains the value of phi dot at the bounds. And that value of phi dot for the given level 5, it turns out to be somewhere near 0.905. And because of that, the number of e-foldings, if you start with the same value of inflatons in the isotropic case, it turns out to be 3.12, which is very different from what we get in the Bianchi-Lund space time. So in Bianchi-Lund space-time, due to presence of anisotropy, there turns out to be a freedom in choice of the value of phi dot and bound, and because of that, it expands the parameter space to be considered at the bounds, and there are more number of e-foldings we see in this case. In the isotropic space-time, to attain around 60 foldings, one should start the value of phi to be 5.50 Planck mass at the bound for an inflatons rolling down. So you can see that in the Bianchi-Lund space time, around 60 foldings can be obtained even when the value of phi is less than 5.5, which is 3.14 in this case. This is just again an example. And so 50 foldings can be obtained at a lower value of phi at the bounds in the Bianchi-Lund space time. So in this manner, we are given space type by giving a little bit more freedom in choice of initial data. It widens up the window of value of inflaton at the bound in order to generate a given number of equivalents. So this may have some implications in the computation of observation signature due to accuracy. One has to sit down and do the calculation. At this point, we haven't done the analysis of the implication of this, but turns out that there could be. So
I'm not sure what values of the mass you are using in this case.
Oh, okay.
But your results in the isotropic case are completely different from the one that you know, either David Sloan and I obtained, or later on Ivan and Dusman did the calculations, right? I mean, we certainly get enough e-foldings
right. If
high bounce is bigger than 1. Whereas you're saying that, you know, you need bigger than 5.50. So there's something, there's a big mismatch here that we need to sort out.
If you consider inciton with 5.0 to be minus 0.905, then number of e-foldings to be 60, then the limited condition so that phi should be around 5.50.
I don't know the phi dot value, right? I mean, the phi dot value comes from the values of the mass that you assume.
Right. Okay. So,
so therefore, maybe you're assuming a different value of mass, because I don't think this is compatible with, I mean, if we use the value of the mass, which comes from the, you know, WMAP data,
right,
then the statement is that if phi bounce is bigger than 1, you get enough e-foldings. So there's some mismatch here that we'll have to sort out. But we can do it privately. But I just wanted to, for other people, I just wanted to say that there is a mismatch that we have to understand.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 17. So here I present a phase portrait of the inciton field in Bianchi 1 spacetime. On y-axis, I've got 5 dots. On the x-axis, 5. Horizontal curve, it shows the slow load curve, while the different trajectories, they correspond to different initial anisotropy in the initial data at the bound. So, and the dotted dash curve with an arrow, it shows the isotropic trajectory. So it turns out that, similar to behavior as we have seen previously, that presence of an anisotropy does not prevent diffusion. All the trajectories, they do meet slow roll in their future evaluation, given high enough phi initial. And in this way, anisotropy actually does not prevent diffusion. And slow roll is an attractor for the installation in the anti-1 space-time. So, moving on to the next slide, slide number 18, here presents the summary of the talk. So, to summarize, we see that there are scattered transitions across the bounds in the anti-1 space-time, and these transitions are seen for the first time in the anti-1 space-time as compared to classical data. And these transitions, they follow a particular order depending on the matter content. Some of them are favored over the others and giving a selection kind of rule. In context of inflation, we saw that inflation does take place irrespective of the initial anisotropic shear in electricity. And anisotropy, presence of anisotropic shear has non-trivial effect on the amount of inflation depending on the initial inflation. And Bianchi 1 spacetime widens up the window of the value of inciton at the bounds for a given number of e-foldings, which, as I pointed out, that we have to look into more detail and see what are the exact implications. And I would like to stop here. Thank you.
So, questions?
I'm sorry to hog all the questions, but let me just go back to transparency 11, if you can, please.
Yes.
Slide 11.
Yes.
very confused about some basic things in this slide, right? I mean, within selection rules. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if we look at if I look at, for example, 1/2 less than delta less than 1 upon square root of 3, right. Middle panel, for example. Right. And it seems that you're saying mm-hmm. that as I approach the bounds,
right.
contracting branch,
mm-hmm.
I can have either point-like singularity or point-like behavior or the barrel-like or... the cigar-like, right? I mean,
right.
all those things are possible coming from below.
Right.
Or, but if I go above, then you only get point-like ones.
No, actually, it's not like that. So, in addition to this parameter delta, there is another... Okay, so, these arrows are double-headed arrows, actually. So the transition is from both sides. In both sides transition is possible, from cigar to point to cigar.
Yeah, but on the right-hand side, is it? Maybe I'm just misunderstanding it, but from the future bounds, from the future of the bounds,
right.
the approach to bounds,
mm-hmm.
then I just did say PPP, these are the possibilities, right?
These are three possibilities for this given value.
Right, so on the right-hand side, B and C are just not allowed on the right-hand, I mean on the...
No, but you shouldn't identify the right and the left with the future and the past.
Okay.
They are double-headed arrows, so these are those are possibilities on the both sides. I mean, there could be transition from barrel to point or point to barrel as you go from one side to the other.
Any side to other.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
More questions? Okay, let's thank Prajesh again.